Hey, all you beautiful TLSers out there. This is David Hayward with Meet a Member Podcast with The Lasting Supper. And today I have the pleasure of talking with Tracy Cullors. Hello, Tracy.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Good. So it's 11 o'clock here, but it's 10 o'clock there.
That's right. You're in the Saturday morning.
Yeah. I have a beautiful sunny morning here. How about you?
Haven't looked out yet.
Oh.
I think it's going to be a nice hot day.
Yeah. Yeah. So where do you live?
I live in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
Notice I didn't say Lancaster.
That's a thing, is it?
Yeah, yeah. You can't say Lancaster. Lancaster.
I've been there, actually, many times.
Oh, yeah? What did you do here?
when I was going to seminary in Boston, I met some people who live there, a couple of couples, actually, and we became good friends. And then after I graduated, my wife and I would drive down and meet them in Lancaster. and we'd drive together to, what do they call it? The Outer Banks of North Carolina.
Sure.
For vacations in the summer. So, yeah. And in fact, I still have friends there. So.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a quaint little town.
Yeah, it's quaint and wild at the same time. You know, it's different from what most people think of.
Yeah, yeah. So, tell us a little bit about yourself. As you know, this is a Meet a Member podcast, so this is the members of the Lasting Supper opportunity to get to know you a little bit better. And I know you're very active on our Facebook group, but maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and, just a few minutes to tell us a little bit of your story.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm 46, just turned that this weekend.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. Married to Bruce Cullors. He's also a member.
Yep.
And we have a daughter together. Her name's Evangeline.
Mm-hmm.
We call her Evie.
Uh-huh.
And she's 21. And we live in a little row home on the outskirts of the city.
Right.
We have two little Dachshunds that Bruce loves more than I do. So, we both work odd shifts. And so you'll sometimes think, don't they ever talk? And some days, no, some days not. Bruce works in a group home with three people that are developmentally challenged adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with pediatric home care.
Okay.
And as a nurse, and we both do wild shifts. I also have a private case right now with a 38-year-old man who's getting rehab. So.
Yeah. So you're a nurse.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So have you guys always lived in Lancaster?
No, we got married in Cumberland, Maryland, because that's where my grandparents lived. And my grandfather was on oxygen and couldn't travel for a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So we got married down there, and that's where I was born and where my parents live now.
Right.
So that's about 3 hours away from us.
Mm-hmm.
When we first got married, we did live in Lancaster for 1 year so I could finish up my year of Bible college.
Okay.
And then we went out to St. Louis for seminary and went to a Covenant Theological Seminary, which was a Presbyterian U.S.
PCUSA?
PCUSA, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did not know this.
I think that's the one. It's the more conservative branch.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
yes,
the
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah, we went out there, and that's actually when Bruce lost his faith. So it was when we were quite young.
Uh-huh.
And
funny how seminary can have that effect on people.
yeah. It was pretty terrifying for us.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it got flooded out of St. Louis then, and the floods of 1993, and were, essentially homeless. So instead of going to a shelter in St. Louis, we just decided to get a truck and move back to Pennsylvania. And so we moved back and lived in York for a year. And I was working in a lot of social services then, in homeless shelters. And so I got a job at a homeless shelter and we lived above it. And eventually we settled into Lancaster.
Wow. So it was after this then that you got your nursing degree?
Yeah, I was 30. Bruce had actually had, so what is 99, he actually had a very serious illness where, he almost lost his life. He contracted just a pneumonia and pleurisy from probably from bad water down while we were camping, and he aspirated a little bit and got into his lung lining. At any rate, he ended up having surgery, major surgery, and on the vent for 3 days and home with IVs. And after that, realized I needed to kind of take charge of my life and be prepared, have a better income. So I went to nursing school at age 30 then.
That must have been scary.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually
I don't mean the nursing thing. I mean
but
Bruce's
the
illness.
Bruce's illness. It was one of those defining moments of the marriage. I think every marriage should have one. A little early, a little early and, not at the very end, but yeah, early. 'Cause I remember thinking, it was rocky him going through deconstruction, and always feeling like I was, doing something wrong because I was a fundamentalist. But then to see him, on a vent in the hospital and it really defined, like, yes, this is who I want, this is who I want to be with. So, yeah, he hasn't ever had anything like that since. But for a while, it was a wild little ride we were on.
Those kind of things that are really scary, sometimes hard to diagnose and stuff. My son, our son Jesse, that's happened to him. Where something weird was going on inside his body and nobody knew what it was. And because he was young and long hair and, tattoos and, et cetera, et cetera, they figured, it was something else. And anyway, that was a scary time, very scary time, until a doctor started taking it very seriously and turned things around. But But I know what you mean too about marriage, how, Lisa and I have gone through the same kind of thing. Not from illness, just from trauma, emotional stuff, and we realized that we really do love each other and want to be together, but it did take a defining moment or two. But she went back to nursing school when she was 48. So, and she got her nursing degree a couple of years ago when she was 53. So, so good for you. So back to seminary when Bruce started losing his faith. So Bruce is the Onion fan, am I right?
Yes, indeed.
We can always count on him keeping us up to date on the World Report with
I've
the
never had to entertain Bruce. He
Onion.
can just be in a recliner and, and reading or, looking at something on the internet, and I hear these great big rolls of laughter coming from him. And I think, that's not a bad husband to have who can just sit and laugh.
For sure. So why don't you share a little bit about this whole, we call it deconstruction for a lack of a better word. We can call it changing our beliefs or losing our beliefs or losing our faith or, evolving spiritually, whatever we want to call it. But how did it sounds like Bruce started long before you and wondered. Go ahead.
Yeah, he did. Although I was prepped, because I had spent a year in Israel, my second year of college, I got an opportunity to go study at Jerusalem University College as just transfer credits for Lancaster Bible College. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was over there at the in 1988, at the beginning of the Intifada.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it was a wild place to be in, and things weren't so cordoned off at that time. So I had friends who were Jewish and friends that were Arabs. And I ended up working in Bethlehem on the West Bank and taking a cheroot there every day to work for Bethlehem Bible College.
What's that, a cheroot?
A cheroot is one of those long taxis that you just, just sits there and it waits until it fills up, and then you take off.
Oh, yeah, like a jeepney in Philippines. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's a, you know, it's pretty efficient.
Yep.
Except if you're the first person and just waiting.
Yeah, true.
But anyway, like, I was open to like a lot of different, you know, cultures and people. Mm-hmm. And that's when I knew that, you know, the confines of fundamentalism, you know, didn't fit my world anymore. Mm-hmm. But so whenever I got back to Lancaster, and Bruce was living with my brothers at the time, and he offered to teach me how to drive. So, you know, we started dating, and we still were in the fundamentalist track, but it's funny, these little degrees that you start to take away from it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were going to like the, you know, the churches that weren't quite approved.
Right.
So they're still very fundamentalist, but, you know, they felt better to us.
Right.
And then we kept veering a little bit more. We were reading a lot of Francis Schaeffer. Mm-hmm. And so then we decided to try the Presbyterian churches. Mm-hmm. And this was, you know, a wild move that was not, you know, approved. But, you know, everyone was just kind of letting us do our own thing. Mm-hmm. And we were going to go down to Capital Bible Seminary in D.C., and then we found out we'd have to share an apartment with another married couple, which creeped us out.
Yeah.
So we picked Covenant Theological, sight unseen. We couldn't afford to go out there, couldn't afford to find our, you know, place to live first.
Right.
So it was like our wild adventure. We felt, you know, very adventuresome. Mm-hmm. And the plan was to study at their Francis Schaeffer Institute, and then go on to lead a missionary life working with Labrie.
Right.
So we got out there, and nobody paid any attention to us because we were poor. And we had not realized that in the fundamentalist culture, being poor is not bad. It's not a bad thing.
No, it's a virtue.
Yeah, it's a virtue. So when we were poor in the Presbyterian world, we got, what do you say, patronized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we never became part of it. So it was just that winter, picked up a book out of the library, and I don't know the name of it or anything, but it was about a Catholic woman who lost her faith. And we read it and looked at each other and said, oh my God, that's what's happening.
It wouldn't be Karen Armstrong, would it? Spiral Staircase?
Oh boy, I don't know.
Yeah, Karen Armstrong, she was a Catholic. Actually, she was a nun. And Spiral Staircase, it's her story of how she left the faith. Anyway, sorry to interrupt you. Keep going.
No, that's okay.
Fascinating story. Keep going.
So then Bruce just, you know, we just stopped going to church in the middle of the seminary year. And mm-hmm. There wasn't anybody out there or any reason for us to be out there. Mm-hmm. Except that, you know, we still loved each other and we were, you know, we were making it. We were relatively happy. Mm-hmm. And then that summer, the floods came. And so although we liked being out in St. Louis, we also realized that we wanted to be around family more than being that far away would afford. I had a niece on the way, so, and we were anxious to start our own family. So we kind of came back as refugees, slept on the floor of my brother's trailer for 2 weeks. And then I got this position at a rescue mission, and they let us have the apartment above the rescue mission. And we were like, wow, this is kind of like God is providing for us. Maybe there is a God, you know, and certainly in order to work for a Christian organization, you know, I had to go to church.
Right.
So I certainly was not talking about doubts with anyone other than Bruce. And that not so much.
Right.
So, you know, I did that kind of work. I worked there for a year, and actually whenever I got pregnant and had Evie, they made it difficult for me to stay. It went against their paradigm to have a working mother. So I left with a, you know, a great deal of bitterness, and we moved into Lancaster, and then I just, you know, it took me a while to get on our feet again after that.
Right. Boy, it's strange, all these little rules and expectations and things that you keep running into and having to leave.
Yeah.
Strange.
Yeah.
That describes a lot of my life too. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, that's my text going. Go ahead.
No problem. I'm kind of lost here. I'm not sure where I was heading after that.
Well, you left the, you were living above the
The rescue mission.
The rescue mission. So then you guys moved back to Lancaster, and
we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got an apartment, and you know, eventually we started making more money and feeling more human, you know, and part of the world.
Yeah.
And we bought a house, the same house. We've actually still are living in here. And we, you know, had some realizations then that this was going to be our life, that we weren't going to be missionaries. And how then shall we live?
Ah, Francis Schaeffer. That's a Francis Schaeffer quote.
Yeah. It just keeps always coming back to that. Because of this, what then?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of things had to be reworked. You know, I didn't have a spiritual leader. I didn't have a moneymaker husband that, you know, provided everything for me. You know, it was a very mutual marriage.
Right.
And that was actually from the beginning. So, you know, I didn't fit in the paradigms of church, but I got so lonely. Without going to church.
Yeah.
That finally, and I would try this church and try that church, and Bruce at the beginning, he wasn't supportive, but then he became supportive. He just wanted me to be happy. So when Evie was, actually, I think I gone through nursing school. Well, I started going to this little Hispanic church. And I was working in a group home with a guy from Puerto Rico. He was mentally retarded, and he needed community outings. And so everyone wanted him to go to church. So I found a little church and took him to it. And it was actually a charismatic church. And it was very healing for me because it was so much love and openness after, you know, I'd been in fundamentalism.
Right.
So to me, it was a breath of fresh air, fresh water. And, you know, I had missed that kind of daily or weekly jolt of inspiration. So, you know, I would go and I would get inspired. So one day the pastor preached a sermon on not letting your fears keep you from your dreams. And every reason I had got knocked down during that sermon. And, you know, I thought what I need to do is be a nurse, and everything got knocked down during the sermon, and I didn't have any further pretenses not to do it.
Wow.
So I
That's
went,
cool.
And it was cool. It was also not logical.
Yeah.
And you know, it's nursing is not it's a natural fit in that I'm a caregiver, but it's a very hard fit for me because I came out of a very regulated background of fundamentalism, and so now to be a nurse in which every word I write and every action I do is analyzed and then ends up in court does not feel like the right choice.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
So yeah, there's, you know, there's a lot of angst with me that goes along with nursing. So I wish I could say, you know, I love every minute of it and I'm so glad God led me here and, you know.
Interesting. I understand that tension because Lisa's the same way. She's naturally a caregiver and she loves caring for people, seniors and people who are dying. So she's specializing in palliative care, and she had the opportunity to get a job or apply for a job in the palliative care unit in the hospital, or to work in a palliative care home, a hospice home. And she chose a hospice home for those very reasons. There's a lot more freedom. You're not being analyzed and scrutinized and everything as much. And it's more like a home rather than an institution. And yeah, so the very same reasons that you were naming there is the reasons why she chose the job she did. Because she feels free to care for people rather than worrying about protocol, etc. Yeah, totally. Hey, can
And
you?
normally working, you know, I work in homes now, and so I do have, you know, some freedom that way, but mostly I don't. And that's just the way it is.
It is,
I
isn't it?
actually had more freedom whenever I worked in the group homes like Bruce does. And so, wow, I was caring for people without all of this, you know, that was valuable in itself. But it is what it is. It's going to be, you know, an ongoing thing I keep, you know, talking about with my therapist. So we'll keep working on that.
So maybe we could take a few minutes and you just talk. Can you share a little bit about how you and Bruce have, how long have you guys been married?
We just had our 25th.
Yeah, so congratulations.
Thank you.
How have you guys, navigated these waters being on different pages many times? Like how have you done that? Obviously successfully.
Yeah, we both of us, you know, have more easygoing personalities and love each other so much. But we also were brought up in homes where we had very strong, angry patriarchs in charge of everything. And so neither of us like to see or hurt each other or see hurting people. So, you know, it's brought a lot of empathy and compassion into the marriage, and I think that helped us weather some of this. For example, Bruce is, you know, I ended up staying at that charismatic church for a decade. And I didn't ever go wholehearted into it. I never learned to speak in tongues. I did go up to the altar a few times and felt kind of foolish, so stopped doing that. You know, so I would flirt around the edges of it, and I would certainly listen to people's stories with great sincerity, just thinking, you know, if that's their experience, I'm glad for them. And it was a very loving church. In fact, you know, I miss them quite a lot. They were, you know, they were my family. But as I started, it all kind of changed for me in 2010. And I got that grace report from about the abuse in the boarding homes, I mean, in the boarding schools of New Transmission. And that's when we started talking about I'm a child of missionaries. I don't know if we didn't talk about that yet. Yes. So I lived in Brazil with my parents from age 10 to 17. The last 2 years I went to a New Transmission boarding school. And in 2010 they came up with a report detailing the abuse that was at a boarding school in Senegal. And so we started all getting on the internet and talking about the abuse that was at our school.
Right.
And that was another one of those really defining moments of, well, the world is not what I thought it was.
Yeah.
It shook me to the core and threw me into counseling. And that's when I left my career type job as a hospice nurse. Uh-huh. And that's when my deconstruction as an adult finally started happening.
Right.
About a year and a half ago, I read a book or listened to a book by David Dark.
Right.
Sanctity of Asking Questions.
Yep.
Yeah. That was a very defining book. That was the first time I ever felt like I was going to be okay about it, that I wasn't terrible and I wasn't going to be condemned.
Yeah.
For being the way I was. So
cool.
Yeah, that was a very important book for me.
Yeah, it's neat when you can look back to actual turning points. I love those moments and I treasure them too. Yeah.
So
why did you leave that little charismatic Hispanic church?
You know, I had too much, what do you call it? The difference between, you know, what you know and then what you're hearing.
Right. Yeah. Cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive dissonance. My favorite terms.
You know, that's a shame. It is a shame because a lot of TLSers express this, and others too, that what they miss most is the community.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's too bad you have to make that choice. It's a terrible decision to make where you have to leave your community because your mind just can't stand the torture.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. The cognitive dissonance was just so immense. And I had actually been in counseling for, you know, in therapy for a couple of years, and I wasn't getting to the point that I needed to get to. Mm-hmm. And it was because of that, because I was seeing a Christian therapist who was very good, doctorate in trauma, but she kept pushing me to find a church. And week after week, I wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And finally, you know, like I started, you know, having a bigger breadth of the world and realized that, you know, I don't have to, and this is going to be what I need for a while.
Yeah.
You know, is to separate myself from the Christian world.
Yeah.
Wow. So.
Well, good for you for finding a therapist. Have you got a different therapist now or the same one?
I do. I actually didn't feel well staying with her. Number one, because my brother had recommended her, and she's a pastor. And just even those slight associations kept me from being, you know, really open with her. And so I left her and chose a therapist that I wanted to, like, pick the wildest, most open therapist in Lancaster I could find, because this is a very conservative area.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So, you know, I went on the web and found she was, you know, LGBT, and she talked about her partner, and I thought, okay.
Yeah. How do you advertise? I am the wildest, craziest therapist in Lancaster.
Yeah. So all you have to do is say you have a partner. And that's a big thing. So yeah. I saw her for this last year, and then she closed her practice three or four weeks ago.
Yeah.
And took a job at her Franklin and Marshall College, counseling and teaching. So I am with a new therapist, and it looks like it's a good fit.
Good.
Really intimidating to start over again.
Oh, tell me about it. I keep pushing this, but one of the biggest factors in me deconstructing in a relatively healthy way without losing my mind, and everything else, was the role of a a therapist in my life. And so I always recommend people. It's like having a car. If you want to travel around with your car, you got to keep it maintained, and it's going to cost you, you know, I don't know what it is there, but it's $75 an hour, labor, you know, to invest in a good therapist to keep your personal life running and maintained. I mean, it made all the difference for me. Of course, there were other things like my wife and some friends and TLS, but a therapist played a major role in helping me sort through it all.
It's been invaluable, especially this last year. I don't want to downplay my first therapist because I was at such a different place. I had no self-awareness. I was completely living for everyone else. And kind of nothing inside me. You know, I completely lived on fulfilling other people's expectations. So that first therapist did take me out of that mire and get to see myself as a, you know, as a valuable person.
Wonderful.
But the second, you know, the second round, the actual deconstruction therapist, you know, she just played a completely different role and one that I needed to do. And that's, she was the one that enabled me to walk through the whole, whether to tell my parents, how to tell my brothers, you know. And then, you know, we waited all through that, you know, through the fall and winter. You know, she helped me prepare to go down to that conference on abuse in Atlanta. And then picked up the pieces when I came back. So, I'd like to, I wouldn't have wanted to go through the year without her.
Yeah, for sure. Well, how did you find TLS? And then let's wrap this up here in a minute. But how did you find the Lasting Supper?
I think it was with, I think it started off with a David Dark, you know, line of questioning and leading me to websites And then I went up to a conference up in Corning, New York, that had a lot of Canadians.
Oh, yeah.
And the conference was with MK Safety Net. And one of the leaders there is one of your friends. And I think just reading her links is how I caught on to one of your links.
Oh, who was that? Do you mind me asking?
Yeah, because I can't think of her name right now.
That's okay.
She's very quiet, but wow, she's a powerhouse. She runs the whole abuse investigation stuff for Prairie Bible Institute.
Oh, I think I know who you mean. I can't remember her name either. Shoot.
And then
not
somebody
Marilyn Singh or anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And then I think I had gone on to that, there's some sort of thing that you post your cartoons onto another web, another FB group about toxic churches or something.
Okay. Yeah. I post my cartoons everywhere.
Oh, okay.
I'm terrible that way.
There's one that I was on, or religious trauma or toxic churches or something like that.
Okay.
You know, and so it took a while for me to, you know, get used to the idea of joining. And then I mentioned something to Bruce and, you know, he didn't care. So that's how I started.
Well, cool. Do you have any, I love your little, the posts you put up every once in a while, like, how you guys doing? Or, you know, I love those. They really often get some really good conversations going. But what's one thing, just as we leave, what's one thing you'd like to say to your fellow TLSers before we go? Anything?
Well, hang in there. It's, you know, I see so much love and openness and then just such incredible pain. I know that this is really, really hard. And, you know, this has been, you know, I think the toughest year of my life. So, you know, it's a day-to-day thing. And I love it when you guys chime in and help me out of a mire. And I love hearing your stories, the good and the bad and the ugly and the beautiful. So I'm just privileged to be part of it. And it's made a big difference in my life. I feel like I've become a different person since I joined TLS.
Yeah, me too. Me too, for sure. Oh, well, thanks for that. I appreciate that. But it's true, you know, you say there's a, you know, there's a lot of love being shared and a lot of funny things being shared, but also a lot of pain. And, you know, I look now and I totally recall those days. They were horribly dark days for me. But now that I'm on through the other side and like you seem to be in many ways, it's, you keep moving and you'll make it through to the other side. Like that's for sure. So,
yeah.
Listen, Tracy, it's been wonderful talking with you.
Yes, likewise.
Yeah. And enjoy your Saturday. You said you had cereal. What were you eating? What's your favorite cereal?
Oh, it's like a honey oats thing, honey and nuts or something like that.
Oh, it sounds so healthy.
Oh, it's not. It's one of those, you know, it looks like it's healthy, but not really. No, I'm one of the unhealthiest nurses out there. Don't ever be intimidated by that with me.
Well, nice, again, nice talking with you. Say hi to Bruce.
I will.
And we'll see you at the Last Week's Supper.
Okay.
Well, that was Tracy Cullors and her husband's Bruce are on our Facebook group a lot. Anyway, if you want me to talk with you, just let me know, and we'll see you at the Last Supper. Bye, guys.